P-67. Gravesen Hotel, Buenos Aires, Argentina. Just weeks after the discovery of a lifetime at Dorlu Tepe, and just hours after realizing that the images of the site which had been entrusted to his care had been stolen from a supposedly secure hotel safe, Mesut Demir was experiencing a tumultuous rush of feelings like none he had ever known. He was able to withstand only minutes of the public notoriety that followed Jan Geller's Blitz News expose, with his phone and computer having metaphorically blown up with notifications of incoming messages and an unprecedented number of mentions on his typically low-key social media accounts. Mesut's name was on the same pedestal, for the time being, as not only Billy Kendrick's but also those of Dan McCarthy and William Godfrey. Worst of all, none of them were being spoken of fondly in any of the countless posts Mesut saw among the initial influx. When the nature and tone of Geller's revelations had seen to it that even Dan, a hero to so many, was being referred to in widely shared posts as everything from a traitor to a hypocrite, a lesser-known figure like Mesut had no chance. This was explicitly highlighted in posts from some major celebrities, the kinds of posts that tended to go viral first in the aftermath of big events or announcements, since so many people followed their accounts and saw whatever they posted immediately, with Hollywood A-lister Caitlin Judd being a prime example. "There has to be more to it than we know," Caitlin had innocently but carelessly speculated to her audience of tens of millions. "Dan doesn't deal in lies like this. I don't know where Billy and Godfrey fit in, but this Mesut guy might have been keeping everything from Dan. That makes more sense than anything else right now." The first time Jan uttered Mesut's name on live TV had been the first time the overwhelming majority of viewers had ever heard it, so it was unsurprising that the context of his introduction had quickly made him public enemy number one. The most common form of reaction to the images was one of unbridled fear, with many commentators doing their usual thing of trying to outdo each other and hyping the supposedly inevitable catastrophes that lay ahead. Fear and hyperbole were the currency of social media, as most observers knew and were increasingly tired of, given that the most extreme views on either side of any issue were likely to be the ones that won most engagement from both sympathetic and opposing commenters. After fear, quite understandably, came anger. Mesut didn't need access to any expensive social media meta-analysis software to know this was the case, since a single glance to the side of his screen showed a list of trending words that began with the likes of hostile and invasion, before continuing with cover-up and liars. Both reactions were equally understandable to Mesut, given the way Geller had framed the carvings, but both were also equally overblown. Absent of Geller's editorial interpretations, Mesut doubted that many people besides the professional doomsayers would have been talking about the tall aliens as imminent threats. There was undoubtedly an element of unsettling awe that came with gazing upon their sheer size, he recognized, but the interactions that had been immortalized on the only pillar excavated so far looked perfectly peaceful. They had also occurred somewhere around 10,000 years ago at the earliest, which Geller had taken care to avoid pointing out in any reassuring terms, so to Mesut's mind, there would have been no reason to assume Earth was in any imminent danger, even if the carvings had shown a scene of confrontation rather than communication. With no idea as to the whereabouts of anyone else implicated in the supposedly traitorous cover-up, Mesut Demir felt more alone than he had at any point of his life. This solitude was also one of the two driving factors that gave him an unshakable sense of responsibility to publicly respond to the potentially dangerous and destabilizing nonsense that Jan Geller had just spouted to a live audience of millions. The other factor, and perhaps the stronger of the two that carried Mesut out of his room and towards the cameras and reporters who were stationed as close to the Buenos Aires Gravesen as its security lockdown zone would allow, was quite simply the guilt he felt for having lost the images. Mesut didn't fully understand that he had been bested by a hoaxed security threat that also duped the teams guarding individuals as illustrious as President Slater, and indeed that the vast majority of the hotel's honest security staff, but even if he had known, this wouldn't have been likely to ease his guilt much. After all, when it came down to it, the images had been stolen from his safe. No one else's. Dan, Billy, and Godfrey, wherever they weren't responsible for that. Masut was acutely aware that Dan in particular had trusted him with the safekeeping of the potentially earth-shattering images which Masut had been set to privately reveal to the rest of the ICA's executive council during a meeting scheduled for the hours after Godfrey's abortive inauguration speech. Even though there was little to nothing Masut could have done to guard the images any more closely than he had, he couldn't shake the feeling that he had let Dan down in a personal sense. Mere minutes in the public spotlight had Masut feeling like an ant trapped under a magnifying glass, being gleefully grasped by the grubby fingers of a fat child on a hot day. When he considered that Dan had been selflessly and stoically enduring this kind of attention and a lot more for several years, the guilt only intensified. Dan's name is being dragged through the dirt again, Masut lamented, all while he's not here to defend himself. And all because of me. It was, therefore, guilt more than anything else that carried Masut Demir across the expansive and otherwise empty lockdown zone outside the Buenos Aires Gravesen. Like everyone else, Masut had seen footage from the previous day of the same lot being crossed by the lone figure of John Cole, a chaos-seeking fat child with a magnifying glass, if ever there was one, and the consideration didn't escape him that he was only able to leave the hotel and walk towards the media because someone had given the order to allow it. Masut didn't give this point too much attention, so full was his mind of other thoughts, but it arose briefly each time he passed another security or police officer among the few dozen who guarded the outer edge of the secure zone at consistent intervals. There was no raucous crowd awaiting Masut like the one that had greeted Cole, who had timed his approach perfectly to coincide with a passing demonstration, but Masut didn't mind that. All that mattered was the presence of a dozen or so TV cameras, all of which were positioned to provide their station's on-site reporters with the closest possible backdrop of the increasingly newsworthy hotel. In this regard, the Buenos Aires Gravesen wasn't altogether unlike the Birchwood Drive-In, Masut reflected as he eventually drew near enough to make out some logos on the parked news vans. His approach was by now causing much excitement among the media pack, none of whom had really expected anything much to happen during their shifts, and none of whom had ever dared to dream that the suddenly famous Masut Demir himself would grace them with his presence. With every step, Masut could hear more commotion to go along with the sight of reporters and technicians rushing around. Until his arrival at the very edge of the zone, he ignored direct calls from the reporters, which all came his way in English, but in varying international accents. But that arrival came within no more than another minute or so of the logos coming into view. There was no Blitz news van, mercifully enough, but the calls from the rest of the reporters were far from universally friendly. Accusatory would have been a better adjective for most of them, with antagonistic and even aggressive perhaps more suitable for a handful of others. Saying his piece wasn't going to take Masut long, but the hostility of his small audience was going to make it more difficult than he had imagined. He tried to clear his mind of these concerns, minor only relative to the gravity of the broader situation, and prepared to address the crowd with the bravest face he could muster. Here we go.